Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Jones.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Brian Jones. I represent Dr. Ahmed Varma.
Before you start, you have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I think 3 minutes, Judge. And
okay.
I have a feeling I'm probably not going to use the remaining 12. The issue is fairly straightforward here. The parties had an agreement as to custody and visitation of their daughter. Ms. Bindle, Dr. Bindle, decided she wanted to change part of that agreement. Dr. Varma did not agree to that change.
Well, Mr. Jones, let me interrupt you because it's kind of a mess, but the party styled this as a stipulation.
Yes, sir.
Now, a stipulation is a legal term of art that suggests, at least in my experience as a trial lawyer, and I know you're an experienced trial lawyer as well, that that's simply the parties agreeing that something doesn't have to be proven. You know, that the fact finder can accept it as if it had been proven. And that's all a stipulation is. Now, this so-called stipulation does a little bit more than that, it seems to me. It stipulates or suggests that it doesn't have to be proven as to what the best interest of the child here is with respect to visitation vis-a-vis the father. And beyond that, then, it also sets out certain requirements for that visitation schedule to be maintained. Do you agree so far?
Yes.
Okay. The trial court then added an additional condition at the request of the mother. The agreement doesn't specifically prohibit the addition of doesn't prohibit the trial court from adding additional things. I don't know. And my concept of a stipulation that's different from what we might regard as a property settlement agreement that distributes marital assets, that if it comes to an agreement, if the parties come to an agreement on that, the court is required to enforce it and adhere to it. Here, the best interests of the child are always going to trump anything that the parties might agree to, and the court can clearly by statute impose additional conditions if it chooses to do so. So I guess my question is, given that everybody styled this thing as a stipulation, and given that it seems, at least on its face, to be in furtherance of the goals of the stipulation to have this additional condition placed, what prohibits the court from doing so?
Well, first off, I think the use of the term stipulation is inaccurate as it applies to the agreement. A stipulation, as the court pointed out, in our legal sense, is essentially a formal agreement that a fact need not be proven. In this case, the term that appears up at the top of the document doesn't really describe what the document is. The document is an agreement regarding the custody and visitation of the child as it's set forth thereafter. So I wouldn't read too much into the word stipulation. Just look at the document and see what it means. And essentially what happens is these parties negotiated and came to an agreement about not only the visitation portion of the program, but the other conditions. Most notably, the self-report condition, where if Dr. Varma were in violation of his monitoring program, he had to self-report Dr. Bindle, and then the visitation would be stopped for a period of time, and eventually it would shake out somehow, some way, in a courtroom later on or by another agreement of the parties. Here, what the court did was it took that self-report component out, and it gave Dr. Bindle unfettered access to Dr. Varma's physician monitoring program, which is not something that he bargained for. He gave away certain things to get certain things, including the self-report mechanism. And so when the court changed that, it fundamentally altered the agreement in a way that was clearly not agreeable to Dr. Varma, as I consistently said throughout that hearing. The court had the authority to reject the agreement. I don't think there's any question about that. The court can reject an agreement of custody and visitation if it determines that agreement is not in the child's best interests. And at that point in time, the court's responsibility is to take evidence and to consider.
Well, you wouldn't have to take evidence, though, if the parties are stipulated. That's the thrust of my problem here is, you know, the parties created this document and they called it a stipulation. Now, you know, to the extent it's a stipulation, you don't get to withdraw a stipulation that the other party has relied upon, typically. And that's sort of what it seems to be requested here. You know, had this been styled an agreement, and had the agreement had specific language, the effect that, you know, if the trial court doesn't accept it, then the whole thing is vacated and you go back to square one, that's well and good. But that's not what this says. There's no language like that in there, and it's called a stipulation. Now, to a layman, you know, not many laymen would maybe know what a stipulation is, or at least not have a clear idea of it unless they watch a lot of TV or something. But it means something to those of us who practice in the courtroom. And it's a legal term of art that has a very specific meaning. And so I guess when I read the assignment of error for the first time in this case, my initial reaction was, okay, it's a stipulation. Why does it, you know, why do you get to throw the whole thing out if the court doesn't go along with it? Because that's typically not my experience with stipulations.
Right. Well, it is not a stipulation. And to use a technical legal term, what I'd ask you to do is look at it in terms of if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, then it's a duck. And in this case, even though it has at the top the word stipulation.
You guys drafted this thing, I didn't.
Agreed. But the title, as we all know, the titles and headings and things of that nature in and of themselves really don't have any meaning. It's the actual body of an agreement that has meaning. So I'd ask you to not read too much into that word. And clearly it is not a factual stipulation. It is an agreement. It is not a property settlement agreement because there was a separate...
Well, it's a factual stipulation only to the extent, or at least to the extent, that nobody has to prove what the best interests here with respect to visitation is concerned with regard to the child.
I suppose. The court implicitly, when it accepts the agreement, or when it accepts an agreement and incorporates it into an order, implicitly determines that it's in the child's best interest. But, of course, what's happening is the court essentially is deferring to the parent's good judgment. Sometimes the court inquires further about why this particular agreement might be in the best interest of the children. Sometimes it does not. In this case, though, what happened was a change to what the parties agreed to. And much like any other contractual agreement, when you modify something without the agreement of the other party, it destroys the agreement. And so at that point in time, as I pointed out to the court, if the court were going to add additional provisions or alter the agreement of the parties in any way, it would have to do so based upon competent evidence. And what is clear from the record is that there never was any evidence that was offered to the court. I loosely used the word proffer in referring to trial counsel's representations of Dr. Bindle's concerns, but even Ms. Bindle's counsel admitted that her concerns were unfounded. The Facebook post that she saw of the photograph led her to suspect something, that Dr. Varma may be out of compliance with his monitoring program, when in fact he was in compliance. He never violated the monitoring program, and yet the court turned around and modified the agreement anyway to give her the right to invade his privacy in a way that he never agreed to. If he had indeed bargained to allow her to have unfettered access to his physician monitoring program, that would be one thing. But he bargained for self-report, and she bargained for self-report, and she got other things. She got sole legal custody out of the deal. This was, in many ways, good and valuable consideration in the agreement. And when it comes right down to it, if the court had evidence, then the court could have done what it did. But the court didn't have any evidence. All it had was a representation of some suspicion.
It had an unrebutted proffer, I guess.
Well, it was not a proffer. It was never a formal proffer. I used that word very loosely, and I apologize. That is certainly on me. I should have never used that word proffer, either in the trial court or here. But a proffer is a formal advancement of facts that then, in order for it to have effect, must be accepted. I was never asked, Dr. Barman was never asked to accept that proffer, nor did we accept the proffer, because we knew that the proffer, well, whatever the representation we made, was in fact false. Dr. Barman.
But isn't there some obligation if counsel makes a representation, if opposing counsel makes a representation, isn't there some obligation on your part, if you believe it's false, to suggest that it's false?
Well, in fact, and unfortunately, you don't see a whole lot of this in the record. There's reference to it, the letter. The Guardian Ad Litem, for example, refers to it in one of her colloquies, the letter from the physician monitoring program that was presented that demonstrated that he was in compliance. He never was in violation of his physician monitoring program. So,
but that letter is not in the record?
It is not, no. It was just simply something that was asked for by opposing counsel. I obtained it. I emailed it to co-counsel, Mr. Evans, and it didn't get to trial counsel, Mr. Cottrell, until that day. And so I had to hand it to Mr. Cottrell that day. But they were not aware of it until that day. I'd only gotten it the day before, as a matter of fact, from physician monitoring program, but there's obviously not much in the record. My point, though, with regard to the whole representation was, he acknowledged, he conceded that the representation, during the representation, I'm sorry, that Dr. Varma never was out of compliance with the monitoring program. It was only that Dr. Bindle had suspicions based upon a photograph on Facebook and a subsequent
call. Well, it seems to me what the circuit court had at the moment when all this is going on is the no hearing has been held because essentially the point has been, quote, stipulated to. And in addition to the stipulation of what the best interests of the child are with regard to custody and visitation, there are these facts that are contained in the so-called stipulation such that your client has a drug abuse problem, that he's getting treatment for this drug abuse problem, and that the treatment potentially could impact on the custody and visitation situation because the agreement itself requires him to report his failure to complete the rehabilitation, the self-reporting requirement you alluded to. So given all that, that's before the court by agreement of, by quote, stipulation of the parties. And then this proffer is made, or this motion is made to add this additional requirement. And the court has before it what amounts to agreed facts and agreed conditions for continuing with the arrangement that's been agreed to, I guess for lack of a better way to put it. And a request is made to add this additional requirement, which of course is ultimately objected to. But it seems to me it's not unreasonable as a circuit judge sitting there having heard the so-called stipulation and accepting as true what's represented in there, that monitoring, that it's in the best interest of the child to provide the mother with an independent way to monitor the father's compliance because of the obvious negative impact it could have on the child if the father is abusing drugs while the child is visiting.
That may be so, Judge, but Dr. Varma had an agreement that he already bargained for, and he did not consent to this being part of that agreement. So my point to Judge Marco was, if you're going to consider adding something like this, we go back to square one. We go back to a point
where... Why do you need to go all the way back to square one?
Because
if the parties are stipulating to this, then it seems to me the only, at best, the only issue needs to be, do I need to take additional evidence on whether this condition is in fact in the best interest of the child?
Oh, no. The all factors under 20-124.3 have to be considered. Competent evidence has to be considered. Dr. Varma is entitled to an orientation
so
hearing.
Is it your argument then the stipulation as to what the best interest of the child is a nullity then at that point?
To the extent that the court altered it, yes.
Okay, I can't wait for you to cite some authority for that part.
Well, it's basic contractual principles, Judge. That, you know, if you move a comma within a contract, that can change the meaning. And if it's not accepted by the other
party. But I guess the premise for your argument is that this is not a stipulation at all.
No, it isn't. Again, you can get hung up on the headings if you wish, but look at, is it a duck? That technical legal term, it's in some book somewhere.
That requires a quack at this.
Yes, it does. Okay.
Thank you, Cass.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is John Cottrell. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Dr. Meenakshi Bindal. And I think that in this case, the first assignment of error really turns on a misunderstanding of what occurred, which is the assertion in the assignment of error that this order, which we call the compliance order, was inconsistent and fundamentally changed the terms of the party's agreement. And it simply did not.
Well, is it an agreement? Is it a stipulation?
Well,
what flavor of duck are we talking about here?
Well, I think Your Honor made a good point about the fact that these it styled as a stipulation, and what it does is tells the judge, since the judge, unlike in, say, a spousal support agreement or a property settlement agreement, the judge has the final authority to decide what's in the best interest of the children. It lets the judge skip that step unless the court has its own concerns. And effectively, that's what happened here.
I've had a lot of cases before I went on the bench, and I never got to unstipulate to something the stipulation didn't play out the way I hoped it would.
And I agree, Your Honor. And then the stipulation, of course, as you said, does not provide. This is conditional, provided that she doesn't get to get direct access to the physician's assistance program information. Yeah, there's a stipulation as to the legal custody. That wasn't changed by Judge Marker's order. As to the visitation schedule, that wasn't changed by Judge Marker's order. It's significant that the stipulation has a provision concerning the father's sobriety, because that's the reason for that's in the record, it's in the atmosphere to then ask for access to the physician's assistance program. And hearing those stipulations, albeit brought to the attention of the court by Dr. Bindal, the court has a further concern, which is, well, and remember, when it comes to this issue of evidence, what was before the court, it's not a factual issue of whether or not Dr. Varma had relapsed. As it turned out, he had not. It's the delay in finding out the information that is the reason for the order. And that was a concern of Dr. Bindal and also the guardian ad litem specifically at 159 to 160 of the appendix, where the motion is filed on October 28, 2016. The concern was raised in September. It's not till the hearing on November 29th that they actually get a letter in open court from the Physician's Assistance Program confirming that he's in compliance. So that delay is the source of concern, and that's the reason the mother is given direct access, because as the guardian ad litem said, she contacted Dr. Varma directly. She was told, well, talk to him directly, and she gets no response. So all this order does is facilitate the spirit of the stipulation and agreement and gives a mechanism for it to work better because of a concern that arose after it was entered into. And it didn't change what the father bargained for in substance in terms of his legal custody or right of access to the child. It simply effectuated what he also agreed, which was that if he relapses, he shouldn't have visitation with the child. So this lets the mother find out. And of course, in the stipulation, he himself acknowledged the mother's right to this information because he agreed to give it to her. This lets her get it directly and promptly, which was the reason for the order. And I think that was absolutely in the court's discretion, serves the best interest of the child, and the court should affirm the order below, unless the court has any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right, Mr. Jones, I think we ate up most of your time, but come on up and we'll give you a minute.
I have one question I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind. Would you agree that if there were no stipulation and if evidence were presented that established all the things that were in the so-called stipulation agreement, all the facts that, you know, the father here had a substance abuse problem, was enrolled in this rehab program and so forth, would you agree that it would be entirely proper for the court to issue an order that contained all the requirements that are in the agreement and the additional requirement that mother sought here, that the program report any failure on the father to the mother? Would that be within the court's authority to do?
The court could do that upon competent evidence, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, should it do so? No. The physician monitoring program exists for a reason, and it's supposed to be private. It's not supposed to allow ex-spouses to have unfettered access to all information within the physician monitoring program. There wasn't any evidence, obviously, that he had violated it, and so whatever the court's concerns were about didn't even exist. That's my point. He was never in violation, and yet the court still altered the agreement. The stipulations, what we look at it, they're really not factual stipulations, they're conditions. There's a schedule of visitation, there are pickup times and things like that. It says nothing in those stipulations about him being a drug addict, or that he needs treatment, or that he might be, there's nothing in there, because those are not factual stipulations within the document.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Your time is up. But I do see that you have unofficial co-counsel with you today.
Well, that is not Dr. Amit Varma.
I gathered that. Would you like to introduce your co-counsel today?
This is my son, Benjamin. He's a rising senior at Cosby High School. He'd served as a Senate page, so he wanted to take a look at the judicial aspect of
it. Well, we welcome you to court today.
You can critique your father's performance.